TFM.
Welcome, Stargazers, to another episode of The Artificial Tango, our dedicated Star Trek Picard podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, it's been a while since we did this show, waiting for Picard to return. And now that Season 3 is approaching, I have to say you've really used the intervening time well. Your Beverly Crusher cosplay looks amazing.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for noticing that. I really appreciate it. I obviously put a ton of hard work into that. And if anybody has been listening to us for a long period of time, well, you know how much I love Beverly Crusher. Huge fan. And I think one of the things I'm just so excited about is, you know, not just this season, but the opportunity for these characters to come back. I don't know of many fans who weren't, you know, kind of disappointed, disappointed with what we got in Nemesis. I'm ready for, I think, these characters to really get their due. And Beverly Crusher, in all honesty, I feel like is one who really deserves her due. And this season of Star Trek Picard really looks like we're going to do that. So I'm pretty excited. And Chris, I noticed that your hair is completely gray now, and you're holding a new Klingon weapon behind you. I thought we weren't going to bring weapons to our conversation.
Yeah, this is a new one. It's called a Pakleth.
Weapon. Was it made by a Pakled?
Yes, exactly. It was designed by Pakleds based on schematics of Klingon weapons, and it kind of works, but it also breaks easily, so I'm going to try to avoid any fierce battles with it.
That's probably a good plan. I think, it kind of scares me, the idea that Pakleds are making these things, and so I think we need to go Starfleet Command about this immediately.
Well, they have their own homegrown weaponry, which they call the Klomp Sword. And they wanted to branch out to something that maybe looked a little bit more fierce. So that's how they got involved with this Klingon stuff. But anyway.
Klomp Sword.
I pulled out the Beverly Crusher cosplay there in reference to you just because you love Beverly so much. And you've been very disappointed that she didn't appear in the first two seasons of Picard. And also, pretty much all the messages that I've gotten from you over the past few days have involved some kind of compliment about Gates McFadden and Beverly Crusher. So it was a natural way to lead into the show.
You know, it really is, though. I think the most exciting thing about all this is just to have this crew back. And, you know, Chris, I wanted to ask you, and I think this is something, you know, we're planning on kind of going back and watching all the Star Trek movies, especially since they've all been coming out on 4K. And we're about to get the final, the TNG run coming up here. But a question that I had for you was, you know, this season of Picard is kind of being billed the same way Nemesis was. And in the sense of, like, this is the final journey of the next generation. We're passing on the torch to the next generation. And so how are you feeling about that? Is that, like, something that you're excited about? You know, do you feel like, was Nemesis a letdown for you? And so you feel like this is a way to finally make good on the promise of that film? Like, how are you feeling going into this?
Yeah, Nemesis, when it first premiered, and I went to see it in the theater, I would say it was a letdown for me. It wasn't like, oh God, I hated that film, that was complete crap, like some fans were saying.
Right.
I didn't feel that way, but I did feel let down. Like, it wasn't what I was expecting, and the tone of it, and just when I left the theater, I didn't feel the same way I did after Generations or First Contact. I did maybe feel similar to the way I did after Insurrection.
which is a movie that I actually quite like a lot now, but not to take us down too far away from your question, but Insurrection came to theaters at the time when in Japan, we really had to wait a long time for movies to come here often, and Star Trek in particular, because it's not that popular in Japan. And I had waited, I think it was about 6 months to Insurrection. And so I had all this anticipation to go see it. And after I saw it, I felt kind of like, that's what I waited so long for. It's not what I was looking forward to, I guess. And then Nemesis maybe was kind of the same way, because there was that big gap between the two films. Longer than we had been accustomed to over the years. And so, yeah, maybe I felt a little bit let down. I've also come to appreciate Nemesis a lot more over the years, but I would say that it's not the farewell to the crew that I would have hoped for if that were really going to be the final journey.
Right. Yeah.
And so here in this situation, I guess I kind of do hope this is the final big mission for this crew together. Not because
the final frontier.
The final frontier. And it's not because I don't love this crew. It's just that I think that you reach a point with characters, and certainly with actors who portray them, where it's time to let something go while it's still at the top. And I think that might be where we are here, because I'll be able to answer that better after we really get into the story and we see what they're going to do with characters.
Absolutely.
But, you know, because we might get to the end and feel like, oh gosh, I really want this to continue. What's the next chapter in this? But it also might be a story where we get closure, what we feel like is closure for characters.
Right. Yeah.
And we don't want them to then bring those characters back again just to make yet another TV series or movie or something, just to make more money for the franchise. So we'll have to kind of see where that is. But overall, I think that, I guess my feeling is that this is probably going to be the end of the road for Picard. I think I just kind of have this feeling maybe a character like Worf, from what we're seeing so far, seems like someone who's late in their, maybe not late in their life in terms of age, because Klingons live a long time, but he seems like he's kind of moving on from this. But I can see characters like Geordi maybe going on to do something else in the Star Trek universe, appearing here and there, maybe Troy. And of course, the whole thing with Seven and Raffi, of course, Raffi being a new character.
Right. Yeah,
I think there's a lot of stuff they could do with Seven. So I don't think it should be the end of the road for everyone that we're seeing. But in terms of this being the TNG crew back together, yeah, maybe I would like this to be the final chapter of that.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things that's going to be interesting is, you know, here on the network, when we get a chance to kind of go, we finally may get to the TNG films and work through them. And I am hard-pressed to find a film to which I was more disappointed walking out of than Nemesis. I just remember walking out of the theater and just being kind of heartbroken that it was everything I didn't want for that final journey of that crew. And, you know, as I've revisited over the years, that feeling hasn't changed all that much. And so I think one of the most interesting things about Picard overall as a series was the fact that, you know, unlike, say, the Star Wars universe, where after Star Wars Return of the Jedi, you know, very happy with where the characters end, right? And I don't necessarily feel like I have to have more of that story, because there is a really good conclusion there, right? And so if you bring them back, you absolutely have the thing you talked about. Do I end up in a place where I'm sorry they got brought back? Well, you know, the Star Wars sequel trilogy came around and I absolutely felt like that. I just wish they had left well enough alone with those characters and done something else. And so coming into then Picard, I was in a place where I was more excited about the series because of the opportunity to maybe rectify a situation where I didn't feel the closure that I was hoping for. And so with that, you know, one of the things that we were talking about, we've been kind of talking about behind the scenes, and we've had a ton of articles that have been coming out as well about the creatives behind this third season of Picard, talking about previous seasons. And one of the big revelations that kind of came into being, and I think we all knew this because we felt it watching the show, was the fact that this series didn't really work towards creating a cohesive whole when it came to from season one to season two, mm-hmm. and now to season three.
Right.
Each one has definitely felt like its own thing, and which is very strange because in this world of ultra-serialized storytelling, one of the hallmarks of ultra-serialized storytelling is the fact that you're building off of things that come before. And so how do you feel about that, especially as we get here to this third season, as you look at the first two seasons?
Yeah, I think that, well, one article that we're very much basing our discussion today on is in the February issue of SFX magazine, and Terry Metalis, who is writing the third season, who's kind of behind this whole reunion of the TNG cast, talks a lot about the development and then what it was like when he came in on season two and got involved in the show. And one of the things that he mentioned is that there wasn't really a plan. He says, when I came aboard on season two, Alex and Akiva were always thinking about each of these seasons being a different story. And so the fact that that cohesion isn't there is by design. So the question really is, why was that the design? Why do they want to go that way? And to me, it felt a bit like, I'm trying to think back. So and it's probably here on a podcast. Someone can go back and find it, probably on the Ready Room with Larry and me talking about this, or you and I talking about it. When Picard was announced, I think I had some concern that they're bringing back a character who I felt had already had their story told on screen. Mm-hmm. And of course, it continued in novels, but if we just stick with what's on screen, why are we bringing this character back? And I think Patrick Stewart had that same reaction when it was first suggested to him. And he had to come around on the idea because he didn't want to just come back and do the same thing again, right? You want to do something different. And right. I also think it's sort of like with The Next Generation, when that show was created, they wanted to set it apart from the original series, from what came before it. And so you get very intentional moves to stay away from things that are familiar, famously right. Vulcans, for example. And this is a case, too, where I think that perhaps they wanted to really make the show different. They didn't want it to be a continuation of The Next Generation, bringing back the TNG elements and like rehashing that. So they went for something that did connect us through mm-hmm. Picard and Data to the past, but actually gave us a new story and also acknowledged mm-hmm. the passage of time since Nemesis. And right. I can understand that. So going into the first season, I thought, okay, this is kind of interesting. They're giving us a different take on Picard. We're seeing where he is in his life now. We're not trying to pretend like this is soon after what we saw before, even though obviously the actors are much older now. So the first season for me overall worked pretty well. I know you didn't like it much, but I thought it worked pretty well until we got to the ending and we got that kind of generic threat at the end, which reminded me a bit of something we might have seen on Discovery along the same time as that was airing. The decision to make, and spoiler alert, if you're listening to this, hopefully you've seen Picard season one and season two. The decision to actually kill Picard at the end and turn him into an android, I think, was interesting from a storytelling standpoint and what it meant for Picard in terms of his support of Data over all the years, and then the fact that now he himself is synthetic. Mm-hmm. But right. Where do you go with that after that? That was the big question. Okay, we're going into season two. Mm-hmm. Picard's an android yep. now. Where are you going to go with that story? And the answer is, we're not. We're just going to do something totally different. And we're going to acknowledge a couple of times that Picard is an android now. But otherwise, we're just going to tell a totally different story. And mostly, Picard's going to be treated like he's the same Picard that we've known for all of these years.
Right.
So I guess that's where we are at that point, season one and two. So then I'll pass it over to you so you can comment on getting into season one and then what they did and then transition to season two before we move on to the next transition to what we're going to get soon.
Yeah. So I think like you, I think you did a really good job kind of encapsulating a lot of the thoughts that I had coming into season one and my trepidation about it. And I think where I landed on it ended up being that, you know, there's the wonderful Monty Python sketch from Flying Circus, you know, and now for something completely different. And that's kind of what I felt like we were doing with the show. We were just trying to be different for different sake instead of actual storytelling sake.
Yeah.
You know, we were the first season is so dark and grim and, you know, it doesn't feel like anything that we've seen in the 24th century up to this point, even with the Dominion War, right? And I think not feeling as though the show felt grounded in what had come before mm-hmm. and kind of in many ways just disregarding the 24th century that we all knew.
Yeah.
I think by starting in that place, mm-hmm. that's where I just felt like that the show, again, we're trying to be different just because we want to be different. Mm-hmm. And instead of really, okay, having to sit down and think, okay, where are we in the 24th century? What's happened so far? And what would make an interesting show for this character to come back? And then, like you said, we turn him into an android, and then we don't really do anything with that. And then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on that point, like, turning him into an android, this is the thing. If this series had been only one season and that was the end of the story, I think having him die and become an android after and saying goodbye to Data could work fine for me because it's the end of a journey for Picard because sure. he was championing Data's rights so much over the years. And we're left at the end of Nemesis with that mm-hmm. sudden loss of Data. And right. you have to believe that that did have a very serious impact on Picard.
Mm-hmm.
What's a little bit of a stretch, I guess, with the story in season one is that 20 years had passed. And would it right. still be eating away at Picard That's many years after, you know,
phenomenal question.
If it yep. were 2 years later, 3 years later, I think that it's much easier to swallow yep. than the fact that he's been wallowing in this. I mean, he hasn't. It's not exactly like it's just devastated him for 20 years, but it's still right. there after 20 years and yes. in a way that yep. I think a character like Jean-Luc Picard would have been able to make peace mm-hmm. with by then.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. No, I 100% agree with you. And that is another place where I just felt like the season had not done the best job of really digging into the full ramifications of everything that's happened before and the amount of time that's passed, which allows us to then get to, you know, where we hope to go. I also think too that, and this kind of comes into our, you know, as we move maybe into season two, it's like, so we don't really have a plan for what might come if we do a season two or a season three. Mm-hmm. I don't always think that's a bad thing, but when you're doing one of these ultra serialized shows, it is important then if you do a second season to really take everything that you did in the first season and then, you know, build on that. Mm-hmm. And I think what was so weird about this is that season two almost completely disregards what happened in season one. In fact, if you didn't see season one, you weren't really at a loss.
Yeah, no, you could watch season two and have no knowledge of season one at all, and you would be fine.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's not a terrible thing, especially if you didn't really like season one. Mm-hmm. But then season two did a thing to which I thought was very interesting, which was to try and answer a question: who is Jean-Luc Picard? They had a very clear idea of okay, this show is called Star Trek Picard, so let's actually dig into this character. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that we took from season one is that Picard has stayed alone. What is it that drives this man to never be able to, you know, fully get himself into a relationship, you know, have a quote unquote kind of more normal life, be able to let people in? I mean, fantastic question to be asking about this character. And regardless of how I felt about, you know, any of the incongruities in this, in that season alone, I mean, season two of Picard isn't the most congruous even with itself. Mm-hmm. But it was very intentional with cracking open this character and finally setting him free, which I thought was just a phenomenal choice. And it's what made that season much more successful for me than the first season, because we actually did something with the character that put him in a place to which, yeah, by watching this show, you know something about Captain Picard now that you never knew before, and makes him a much different character, and, you know, gave him an arc, which is what you would want.
Well, and those elements made sense if you go back and watch The Next Generation and you observe the character, what they did with the character of Picard in season two of Star Trek Picard, it does connect. You can see the threads there. So it's not like out of the blue, let's make up some kind of thing that has been haunting him for all these years.
Right. And in that way, you're also honoring, and the big C word, the canon of the series that you're basing it off of, which is, I think, you know, it's not a dirty word to say that if we're going to continue on in a series, that we should actually care about what came before and try and do a good job of building off of that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, go make your own series, you know? Yeah. Like, there's no reason to play around in the Star Trek universe if you're not going to care about Star Trek. And Star Trek has a story that it's already told. If you don't want to play in that playground, go play in somebody else's playground.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, we're on season two. Just rewind just for a second, though, because I wanted to say something earlier about season one. When you say they disregard the 24th century, do you mean they skip too far ahead, or they don't acknowledge enough of what happened? Because they do base it on the idea that Romulus was destroyed, which I think is in part an attempt to try to bring these two timelines together and make the whole JJ thing branching off kind of fit in and make a little bit more sense. But they do base it on that, which is an event that we know happened in the past. And they pick up the death of Data, the end of Nemesis, which is something that also was left hanging at the end of that film,
right,
because there was nothing afterwards. And it happened so sudden. I think most people were shocked by that moment when it actually happened in the movie, because I remember I wasn't expecting that Data was actually going to die in the movie, watching it on screen. And it happened so close to the end of the movie. And then there are bits of the end of that movie that got left on the cutting room floor. So there was nothing after that. So they do pick up on an event that we know happened and maybe we've been wondering about. So I don't know that I really feel that they disregarded the 24th century in season one, but one thing they did is, and it's somewhat natural because of the passage of time, and it's also somewhat expected because they've got this other show in Discovery in production at the same time. They picked up aesthetics of Discovery and put them into Picard, especially the design of aliens, where they used the more updated Tellarite, for example. And visually, it didn't feel like the 24th century that we're familiar with.
So when I say that I don't feel like that they really used the 24th century well, I think it's partially the fact that everything looks so drastically different. But I also I feel like that the storyline itself that they try to force into the 24th, 25th century at this point doesn't really make sense to me. The reaction that humanity has with the attack that happens. And I also, I think the other, the biggest problem that I have is that the payoff for why the attack happened and the Romulan aspect with this weird board thing and then these and synthetics, it never really all comes together very well.
Yeah, I agree on that.
And so therefore you're just kind of left feeling like, I feel like we've tried to be very different for different sake, because we want to tell a specific kind of story because we're trying to get off a specific type of message instead of really allowing the story for Picard himself to drive the show, which is, again, where I think season two is much better than season one, because everything that happens in the series of season two is based around what we're doing with the character himself. And therefore, even if some of the things don't work, right, the narrative structure and the thematic structure are all playing into Picard, and everybody else's story is kind of mirroring Picard's in ways to help us kind of continue to get that theme. But it's not really, you know, I don't feel like it's really heavy-handed or anything like that. Whereas I think that's the thing. Season one just feels really heavy-handed and maybe ham-fisted. And it just never really congeals in a way that I love or like, even.
Well, and season one, too, bringing the Borg element in felt largely just an effort to connect a familiar element from Picard's past into the story. Like, of course, there's going to be some kind of Borg. Here's something familiar that you all know. But yeah, the story, it does feel like the season one feels like a few different stories trying to fit together, but not fully fitting together. I agree on that.
Well, and I would also say, just to bring it back to the Star Wars illustration that I made, it does feel like the sequel trilogy. None of those films feel very connected to one another, right? And it doesn't make for a great story altogether. And that's where we kind of are with Star Trek Picard, is that parts of the overall three seasons may be great. Hopefully the season three is amazing. But so far, part one and part two don't really play that well together.
Sure.
And
yeah,
so
right.
it creates that frustration where you would have liked to have a more cohesive whole.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree on that. So in season two, we got Q, we got Guinan, and Metallus mentions in this SFX story that that was something he tried to do in season two, is start bringing in those familiar elements from the Next Generation. And I think he did it in a way that made sense for the character of Picard. And then he really wanted to get the whole crew back together and had this idea to do that for season three. And then he talks in here about meeting Patrick Stewart and sharing a bottle of wine, going over the story, and then Patrick getting on board, and then they have to work out with the studio how to bring everybody back together, because he points out that it's a different financial commitment to bring everybody back too. So we had to figure that out as well. But he says there was not a plan B. This was it for the third season.
Right.
And I think that's something, I don't know how often fans think about the business side of all of this, but managing to get all of these actors back together is quite a feat. And like Metallus says here, a much bigger, I think, financial investment on the part of the studio to put together this final season. So a lot of people say, a lot of fans like to say these days that the studio doesn't care about Star Trek anymore, doesn't care about the franchise or its history. But to me, the fact that they're willing to do this and make what has been said to be basically like a 10-part movie, it's like cinematic quality season with all of these actors back together, I think is the studio really honoring the history of Star Trek and the franchise. It's like an homage to everything that built what we have today. I mean, of course, the original, the TOS crew built the foundation, but the TNG crew, they're the ones who actually turned Star Trek into the mammoth franchise that it is today and made it possible to have all the spinoffs.
Yeah, I think the thing here, and this is what's most interesting to me, is the fact that Terry just seems to completely understand what we as fans have been looking for. As you're reading what he's saying, I was just struck by, he feels like the Dave Filoni of the Star Trek universe, where he really cares about what came before, and he really wants to build on that and make it worthwhile that we're going to bring these characters back and make you feel like, yeah, I'm so glad that we're taking this journey, that we're bringing these characters back, that we're doing something that matters for, you know, the Star Trek universe, and we're going to honor everything that came before, not by like telling you wasn't important or changing it just because, we're actually going to use it. We're going to pay attention to it. And the fact that he's talked about the idea of that this isn't just about the Next Generation crew, but this is about honoring the entire 24th century saga that we had gotten from the Next Generation all the way to Voyager, where there is so much more to what we know than just the Next Generation, which is to me, I think, one of the most exciting things that, a creator of Star Trek is caring enough to give us some really excellent stuff. And I'm hoping that that means there, and he's even alluded to, there are lots of more surprise cameos and stuff going on in this series than, you know, just the ones that we've seen. So
do you think
me,
that the DS9 connection is going to be Morn sitting by a bar in one scene?
You know what? That would just be phenomenal if that
was
the case.
If, like, if that were there, just as a gag.
How awesome! What a great gaffe and just joke. But I mean, I think too, when we think about the future of Star Trek, right, and how we could move on from Picard, there are people that are from the Deep Space Nine crew and the Voyager crew that you could connect together to continue to tell stories. You know, the Picard part could be over, but the 24th century itself and those characters still have a lot to offer. And I think to me, that's something that's a really exciting prospect. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, to me, Terry seems to be the person to do this because I really feel like he cares about Star Trek in the way that we all as fans absolutely care about Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been a part of Star Trek where I've almost felt like we've wanted to apologize for it in some ways and try and make it cooler in some ways,
mm-hmm.
just because we think that's what people want. But I think, again, The Mandalorian is huge on Star Wars, and it feels like the original trilogy. You don't need to make it cooler, you know? It already is cool. Mm-hmm. And I think Star Trek is the same way. It already is cool. We don't have to make it cooler.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, The Mandalorian feels a lot more like a throwback series to television from the 90s, the 2000s, kind of that kind of storytelling. And it is striking to me when I watch much older Star Trek. Yeah, the tone and the style of the storytelling and the sets and the pacing and the filming, it's all, and the writing, it's quite different than what we're typically getting on television these days. And I think Star Trek is often falling into that desire, or maybe it's not even desire. I think some of it is sort of like a subconscious thing. It's just because this is what science fiction is like these days. We're getting that style and aesthetic,
yeah,
creeping into a lot of Star Trek as well, which is understandable. But I think that, you know, like the kind of story we got in season two with Picard is a bit more richer character story, like you and I hope we would always get in Star Trek. And I think we're probably going to get in season three here, maybe the most that we've gotten in decades on Star Trek from what I can tell so far. And Metallus, for those who aren't aware, you know, he has a background going back to Voyager and Enterprise, where he worked as a production associate on the last two seasons of Voyager, and he was there for all of Enterprise, and he wrote a couple of episodes, Impulse and Stratagem, in the third season. And Impulse in particular, I think, is a really good episode. And he worked with Brannon Braga. He was an assistant for Braga. And so he has this background and this experience with and this love for the source material from that era of Star Trek, where we had new Star Trek for, what was it, 18 years consecutive. Yeah. And I think that's shining through in what you're seeing here. And I love the fact that he has been given a chance to put together this third season. And I also love that clearly, if you follow him on Twitter in particular, where he shares a lot of information, not about what's going to happen in the plot, but in like the development and his thoughts on Star Trek, you can tell that he has this energy to continue creating new Star Trek in the vein of this stuff that I think fans would really connect with should the studio decide to go that route, which, as he very rightly points out in the SFX story and on Twitter, that's very much up to us as the fans. If we support this and we make our voices heard, that this is the type of Star Trek that we're looking for.
Well, and I think there's something to that as well, right? If you, through what you create, if you tell people by what you're giving them that what came before was, oh, it was kind of silly and, you know, it's too slow. Kind of apologizing for it basically by what we're giving you now. I think that, again, it does a disservice to the overall whole, right? Because, you know, one of the things about Star Trek, again, is that it's this one long continuous thing. And, you know, there's been plenty of random changes in there, silly things, Klingon makeup changing, and, you know, like all this stuff, right? And, but at the same time, that Klingon makeup changing doesn't destroy who the Klingons are.
Right.
You know, it, from the original series to what we get in the films. It's all about, and every fan could let it go because we just knew it was about money. And so those type
budget
of things.
In, you mean
exactly.
Ability to actually create the look that,
exactly.
that they wanted for the Klingons. Yeah.
100%.
And here you're talking about, you're not talking about the Discovery Klingons, you're talking about the TOS transition to the films and then
exactly.
the evolution of the makeup over the course of all these other series through Enterprise. Yeah.
Where with Discovery, it felt a lot like the first season of Star Trek Picard. Well, we're going to be different just to be different.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, and to me, what they showed me was, oh yeah, what you thought was cool or what was back then, it wasn't good enough. Like it's not important to pay homage to. So we're just going to do our own thing. And to me, that just kind of it's disrespectful. So
yeah.
and that's where I feel like Metalis is very respectful of what came before and is honoring it. While at the same time, you know, they're still using the Picard look that's been created now. I mean, everything's shinier and much more reflective, you know.
Well, everything's shinier, but there was a great deliberate move in the second season with the Stargazer to return to the overall, the Elkars and the overall look.
Yes, exactly.
We knew of the 24th century. Yeah.
Yes. To make it feel more congruous. And then in some ways, it just like, okay, this is the update, right? This is 20 years later. Starship design has grown
it's
in the sense that everything
now.
Has gotten sleeker. Yeah. And yeah, exactly.
Probably
it's
they did a scientific research and they found out that it wasn't really best for crew health to have carpet all over the ship. You know, you're running around with those
especially
boots
if you have
on.
A pet, right?
Yeah.
You know, dander everywhere.
I mean, can you imagine what Data's quarters actually smelled like with that cat in there all the time?
Well, being allergic to cats, no. So hopefully, you know, allergy medication is much better in the 24th, 25th century. So,
yeah. Well, I imagine that you would be very happy to have an allergy in the 24th century because you'd get to go visit Dr. Crusher regularly.
Absolutely. That sounds like a fan. I'd just have feign allergies just because, you know. But, you know, to me, and this is the thing that is really exciting, is that I am looking forward to season 3 more than I have anything else coming out in Star Trek for a very long time. And it comes from the fact that I feel like Metalis gets Star Trek in a way that looks like it's going to be just fantastic and fun. And really, you know, if this is the final journey, if this is the final flight of the crew of the Enterprise from the Next Generation, I have every confidence that I'm going to be very happy with it and feel like, you know, we've taken a journey that's worth taking. And to me, that's just so exciting that that's the case.
Yeah, same. I'm very much looking forward to that. And one thing I just want to put out here on the show is that the latest poster that came out, there is a, just in terms of talking about what we might get in the story, because we haven't seen, I know people have gotten screeners and some people have seen about 6 episodes, and there are a few people who want to make sure that everybody knows they've seen 6 episodes because they constantly tweet about it, and no spoilers, but, and you'd better avert your eyes because that means they're going to tell you something that is a spoiler because they want to make sure that you know that they have seen these screeners. But anyway, on the latest poster, there's a mysterious character who appears among the crew, a kind of young guy who I just kind of suspect is probably the son of Beverly and Jean-Luc. What do you think?
You said that to, so we were talking about this the other day, and I love that idea. I think that it would make for an incredible story if that's the case. Specifically, you know, it's the whole thing is just going to be interesting because you know, you felt like Laris and Picard were going to be in a relationship because of the end of season two, and now it kind of feels like that in you know, season three, we are going to return maybe to the question of Picard and Beverly, and them having a son like this, I think would be fascinating, you know, to quote a Vulcan that I know.
Yeah.
I think that the idea that did Picard even know?
You well, know, that's
did
what
Beverly
I'm thinking.
Tell him,
right?
You know,
yeah.
So you turn this into like a Kirk thing,
mm-hmm.
Where he doesn't really even know he has a son, kind of thing. Even though we know Kirk knew it, just he wasn't around, able to be around his son.
Yeah,
so,
in Kirk's
you know,
space. Yeah,
exactly. So I love the idea. I think that would be great. I'm a little frustrated the fact that we might just disregard season two's relationship and move to Beverly and
well,
you know,
I think that's a given.
But I don't know.
I mean, because I mean, maybe Laris is going to be in there momentarily, but I don't know. I just think probably this is, it's a new story. And
yeah. Oh, I think you're right.
And so. The reason I think this about the character on the poster is the moment I saw it, I said, what's Trip Tucker doing in here? Because it looks a little bit like Trip Tucker. But of course, I knew that wouldn't be possible. So then I thought, probably this is their son, because why? We were always wondering, where's Beverly? There's no mention of Beverly
right.
at all in the
right.
first two seasons. And then we do know here in what's been revealed so far, we do know that Beverly has not been in Starfleet, and she's been
right.
off far away exploring other places and doing other types of medicine. And now she's back. And so what's been happening during these 20 years, if you look at the character on the poster, the age works out pretty well for something like that. And in this SFX issue, there's a spread. They do an interview with Gates McFadden, and they have a photo of her on the left side of the spread that's a scene from season three. And there's a little pull quote over the photo in the corner that says, my lad's done very well for himself, you know. And I don't know if that's a clue or a spoiler, or if that's just something that they dropped in there, but it just, when I read it, it reinforced for me the idea that that might be a story element here. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm totally wrong.
Yeah. If it is, I think it's a really good storyline, honestly. I think it's one that would be an interesting journey to take. And in all honesty, if this season, you know, kind of ends up with that relationship finally being able to happen of Beverly and Jean-Luc, I would be very happy, you know, because it is very sad to me that it was obviously something that was always there for the characters,
mm-hmm.
and they just never did anything with it. And, you know, one of the beauties of Deep Space Nine was them just being like, yeah, these two characters work well together. Let's get them together. See what happens, you know, and really taking that plunge. And so I kind of want some of these characters to end up happy at the end, if this is the last time we see them, right? You
mm-hmm.
know, Metalis has said that, you know, not everybody might make it, so that might be interesting. But I do think it would just be nice. Doesn't Picard deserve to be happy at this point?
Yeah.
Doesn't Beverly deserve some happiness?
Right. Well, yeah, if there was one thing that I want answered in season three, even before we knew that they're all getting back together and that we are going to have this kind of cinematic story of 10 parts here, it was what happened to Jean-Luc and Beverly. Because
right.
What happened to Worf? What happened to Geordi? What happened to Troy and Riker? We already know because we've gotten a bit of that. You know, Worf, Geordi, I don't necessarily need to know. I can just go on with where their characters were left. But that Picard-Beverly thing and why it was missing from the first two seasons was something that's yes. been nagging at me and lingering. And so I'm very glad that that's going to be addressed.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. No, I'm right there with you.
All right, well, let's wrap up because we're about to hit an hour on this. So let's just bring it around to our original question to close out. The fact that we've got a series with three seasons that don't have any connection to each other. Ultimately, when it's all said and done, how do you feel? It's okay that we just have these three chapters, which are like three looks at Picard, and it's not one long story? Or are you going to be left wishing that they had a thread running through all three seasons?
Mm-hmm. Well, the most interesting thing is going to be, are they able to create a season three here, which makes the other two seasons make more sense? And I don't know if that's going to happen. And, you know, even if it doesn't, you know, if this is a great third season and it really does what we want it to for these characters and creating a nice end for them, that's fantastic. I will say, though, that if that is the case, I do think that they left a lot on the table that could have created something really special with this character, Picard, and all of the other characters in the end that could have amounted to so much more than just three variations on a theme.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a missed opportunity for what could have been. And I think that, Chris, this does go to show just how important showrunners are to shows. And having a vision, right? One of the things that we talk about on The Orb all the time is the fact that these writers had such dedication to the craft and to the story that they were telling that they were able to create something even though they did not have that plan from the very beginning, right? But it flowered into one.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens when you have the same showrunners, though, for 7 years.
Well, that's key.
And I think that's really, when it comes down to it, that's really where the failure comes with Star Trek Picard and its inability to do that is because you didn't have a consistent vision the entire time for what the show was supposed to be.
Right. Well, and even more so than Picard, Discovery has been plagued by that, especially in its conception and through its first couple of seasons. That lack of stability at the top can really show. It really shines through. And, you know, we've seen that. And people like to criticize Rick Berman. I know it's fashionable these days to put him down. And reality is that, you know, Rick Berman was continuity from Gene Roddenberry, and then Rick Berman provided a stability through those 18 plus years of Star Trek, and also had people like Brandon Braga around who came up and throughout the producers and the creative crew and all, there was that group of people that were together for so long. And yeah, sometimes that leads to maybe somewhat still storytelling, it can, if people are together for that long, but that's a long time. And all we're right. asking is, can we keep the same band together for 2 or 3 years, please? And it does make a big difference, for sure.
Well, and then moving forward, too, I mean, if season 3 turns out to be the season that it seems like it is going to be, I think it is absolutely clear that Metalis should be the one to continue on
yes.
whatever comes next.
Absolutely.
And in fact, I would say that you should probably put him over as a person over all of Star Trek, because mm-hmm. he seems to really understand what Star Trek is intrinsically, and the type of storytelling that is important. Again, like a Dave Filoni, where yeah. you know, you just get the story and you're able to produce stories that make sense for the universe that you're in.
Yeah. Or at least put him up along with Kurtzman as like co-executive
yeah.
producers
yep.
of the entire franchise to really oversee that
too.
Thing. You know, having two people work together, I think, can be really good than having just a single person.
I agree.
You know, kind of guiding that. That's not to say that, like, you know, Alex Kurtzman is pulling every string in the franchise or anything, because no one has time to do that. But I think mm-hmm. that it would be great to have Metalis up there as well.
Yeah.
Guiding things. That would be wonderful. All right. Well, that is our kind of preview transition as we get ready for season 3, which is going to be premiering here in just exactly 2 weeks from the time that we record this. And so we'll be starting our full run of The Artificial Tango, going through each episode of season 3 right after it airs. So I hope everyone will join us for that. And Matthew, I'm really looking forward to that.
I am as well, Chris. I feel like I've been on the edge of my seat for a few weeks now, and articles like we read in SFX have only hyped me even more. The trailer that came out was great, and so I'm 100% looking forward to this, which is exciting. I love looking forward to new Star Trek.
Well, everyone, if you have thoughts to share on what we talked about today on Star Trek Picard, on the structure of seasons 1, 2, and 3 being different stories, we'd love to hear that. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join our listeners group, the Babel Conference. If you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And it is a closed group just for listeners to extend these conversations beyond the podcast. And we'd love to see you there. You can also send us email if you like. Just go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose The Artificial Tango. And that will come right over to Matthew and me. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not gazing at that full-page photo of Gates McFadden in this issue of SFX, where can people find you?
Of course, you can find me all
Sorry,
over
I just
the place.
I won't leave you alone today on this, will I, Matthew?
No, but you'll find me all over the place here on the network. Of course, also online, MattRushing02, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero. You can also find me on the 602 Club. We're talking about all of the other fandoms we love outside of Star Trek. So much going on. We got a really busy year coming up there. You can also find me doing Literary Treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek, The Orb about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Saddle Up about Strange New Worlds, and of course, get ready for more Artificial Tango. Over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me doing two shows. One is called Owl Post. I did that with Drea Kaufman, and we talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And the great John Mills and I are talking about Star Wars every week on Aggressive Negotiations. Chris, when you're not trying to make sure that those hips are loose for some more tangoing, where can people find you?
I do need to work on that over the next 2 weeks because they're a little stiff right now, but I'll be ready when the season premieres. When I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, doing all these shows with you. Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time, and you can find me in many episodes in the back catalog on many different shows. And if you'd like to chat, you can find me in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, but I'd love to chat with you wherever you are and talk about Star Trek, Picard, whatever, and I hope to touch bases with you there. Now, if you'd like to help us keep this show and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help to find out how to support the network. And maybe you want to become an associate producer of The Artificial Tango for Season 3. You can do that if you go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We really appreciate everyone who's supporting us now. We wouldn't be here without you. So thank you so very, very much. All right, Matthew. Well, I will see you here in a couple of weeks as we start the final journey of the next generation.
Well, Chris, I can't wait, so make it so.